The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Recently, everybody was shocked about the rock star's death, Prince, at an early age. But what was more shocking was Prince had no estate plan. Joining me as my special guest on the program today is Adam Sherry. He's an estate planning specialist from the firm of Anderson & Yoakum. And Adam, let's talk about probate, because that's what's going to happen with Prince's estate. Latest estimation, the value of his estate was anywhere between $250 million and $300 million. I want to talk about probate, but also the number of things that he could have done to save estate taxes, because his heirs are going to pay an estate tax of over $100 million. So let's begin with probate, because he didn't have an estate plan, which is really not true, because if you don't have an estate plan, you automatically get one. The state in which you live in or domiciled creates an estate plan for you through the process of probate. So let's begin with probate, what it is, and why most people want to avoid it.
Yeah, absolutely. The state will provide you with an estate plan if you aren't proactive in establishing your own. So the probate process is the process by which the court supervises the transfer of the deceased person's assets. So let's just talk about Prince here. So the court is going to supervise the transfer of Prince's assets to either other individuals, other living individuals, or organizations. And so if a person has left a will, they didn't necessarily go to the length of establishing a trust, but let's say they left a will, then the court is going to still supervise that transfer. It's still going to be subject to probate. However, it'll be distributed to the persons identified in the will. Now, if there's no will, just like you said, the state is going to provide a distribution scheme, usually under their default laws, oftentimes found in the probate code. So that's going to be something where they identify individuals and they divide it among them, such as a surviving spouse and children.
Yeah, I guess according to the press, Prince had one full sister, five half-siblings, and he may have had an adult child, depending on a DNA test. So all of these things, the court has to deal with that. And a lot of times, the way the estate is distributed may be in a way that the original owner of the assets would not have liked or intended. And it just strikes me as unusual, because we've heard about cases like Anna Nicole Smith, Howard the billionaire, Howard Hughes. There was one of the heirs to the Johnson & Johnson fortune. Why do you think it is, Adam, in your experience? I mean, Prince was a brilliant singer, a brilliant businessman, and yet he had no estate plan. It's just hard to imagine somebody that is that talented, that smart. It just wasn't that he was a good entertainer, but he was also a sharp businessman, would not have an estate plan.
I couldn't agree more. So, you know, I don't think that it's for lack of intelligence or lack of drive or lack of motivation. Oftentimes, it comes down to the emotions that are associated with thinking about one's death or planning for one's death. You know, when we sit down with clients, oftentimes in our first meeting, we are forced to talk about unpleasant topics like our own mortality or the fact that we're going to leave people behind. And it also requires us to focus on some of the details regarding finances that are also kind of difficult to get our head around sometimes. So, you know, as far as I can tell, most of my clients are concerned about talking about their own mortality, and also they don't necessarily have their finances organized.
And you know what makes this a little bit more difficult today is where you see a lot of second and third marriages where you have separate assets that come into a marriage, separate children, separate needs for children. This can really get complicated unless you do proper planning.
These are some tough conversations that people are going to have. And so facing them is something that is really worth taking time to do while you're alive. Because, you know, this whole topic really focuses us on the fact that nobody's going to be able to escape death. And if they don't take steps during life to identify the people to whom they want their assets to be distributed and, you know, take some proactive steps as far as establishing a trust, then the state, as you pointed out, is going to come up with a way to distribute those assets. Now, you identified all the potential people who might have an interest in Prince's estate. And so they are going to be proactively representing their own interests, potentially, you know, fighting to elbow out one person or another if it increases the share of their interest in the estate. And, you know, these sorts of things get really messy. They're really expensive. And oftentimes the first thing that's lost in this process is the wishes of the decedent. So by not facing those tough questions and dealing with the realization that, you know, Prince was going to pass away at some point, he lost the ability to determine who it is that receives his assets, which were sizable. And oftentimes, the people who are left behind are subject to claims from, you know, these more remote relatives who may have an interest. And that's one of the things that I oftentimes tell my clients is that it really is kind of a gift that you are giving to the people who survive you by making your intentions clear. You are avoiding the need for them to have to deal with these other people who may be making a claim.
Yeah, and what we're running into today, and I'm sure you see this in your practice, Adam, is in the case of second marriages that we see so often today, there may be, for example, special needs, or just in a straight marriage where, let's say, one of the children, like I'm dealing with a case right now where the daughter was married, was abandoned by her husband with children. She was basically a stay-at-home mom, and she did not have the skills to go out in the marketplace. And so, you know, my client wants to make special provisions to make sure that she's going to get a greater allotment of the estate and income because she's going to need it, where the other children of the marriage are doing quite fine. But if you don't have that spelled out specifically, either through will or trust, that's not going to happen. The courts don't see it that way.
Not at all. I mean, so we're talking about a specific situation that requires a non-standard division of assets. And those sorts of nuances just are not built into the state laws, and they are not equipped to deal with special situations like that. And, you know, those sorts of things are pretty easy to identify during life. So for some of your listeners, if they're sitting there right now thinking, it wouldn't necessarily work out best to have an equal division between all of my children, if they don't take a proactive step, something like that is going to happen.
What are the consequences in time? Probate is expensive because the fees are based on a percentage of the estate. So obviously, the larger the estate, the greater the fees. But Adam, also talk about the time. Now, in the case of Prince here, where we have one full sister, five half-siblings, and a possible adult child, depending on a DNA test, there are going to be six or seven different parties that are going to have a vested interest in the estate. So that means they're going to hire attorneys. This is going to go to court, and we know that this is going to take time because they're all going to be battling over a sizable fortune of $250 million, although $100 million of that is going to go to the government in the form of death taxes, which could have been avoided. We'll get to that in a moment. But talk about the time delays and the fees involved. So, for example, if I have an estate, I want to leave it to my children. They may need it. This is a process that can run years. In fact, you may know the case of Howard Hughes. Didn't that case go on for a decade or more?
Absolutely. And that's not abnormal, at least when it comes to large estates, because when that many people are interested and there's that many attorneys involved, each one is entitled to ask the court for, you know, an extension if necessary, for a sufficient amount of time to prepare their case. And so when all these different people are involved, it just increases the number of actors who could very well be extending it for one reason or another. Now, one of the big problems associated with this that may not necessarily always be associated with persons having very large estates, but it could be, but oftentimes is more relevant to other individuals of more moderate means is that they may be leaving behind people who need access to that money. And so if they have to wait for the probate procedure, a court's going to have to get involved. A court hearing date is going to have to be set. They're going to be subject to a lot of the restrictions that all of our government entities deal with. So that's really going to slow them down. Now, you mentioned the expense. And so, you know, one of the good examples, and pardon me, just to go backwards a second, you hit it right on the head. The expenses associated with this are a percentage of the total estate. So, for example, in California, where we are right now, $1 million estate, let's say, would result in $46,000 in fees right now, according to the state set percentages.
Wow.
Now, half of that is going to go to the executor or individual who's supervising that, and the other half of it is going to go to an attorney. And I got to say, if someone has $1 million estate, it is highly unlikely that preparing an estate plan prior to death would even come close to that number. And, you know, as you said, that may represent a major windfall for the attorney who is potentially being paid much more than the amount of work that they're doing since they're not being paid on an hourly rate here. So there's a certain savings aspect here to making sure that your estate is not subject to the fees that, I mean, as an attorney, I have to point this out. You know, these rates are set by attorneys who are making sure that it's included in legislation and the probate code. And so it's really no surprise that they end up being a pretty good deal for attorneys at times.
And so we've got the time, we've got the expense. In many cases, and I think this is just lack of proper knowledge, most couples, if they don't have an estate, let's say they're a young couple buying their first home, they usually buy the home with joint tenancies with the right of survivorship is how they take title to a property. And they think, okay, joint tenant, obviously, if the husband dies, it goes to the surviving spouse, you avoid probate. A lot of people think that property titling or using joint tenancy gets rid of the ultimate probate problem. It only does that on the first estate, but I have seen surviving spouses put their property and assets in joint tenancy with their children, thinking that this will avoid probate and it's cheaper than getting an estate plan. Adam, talk about all the problems that that creates, beginning with liability and also with possible gift taxes.
Yeah, those are two of the biggies when we're dealing with this sort of approach to planning for your eventual death and transferring your assets. So by doing that, you are actually giving a one-half interest to this other person that you're naming. So when it happens to be two spouses, you know, we'll talk in a second about some of the problems associated with that, then that's not necessarily such a big deal. But when you're dealing with a case like you identified of a parent and child, you are making a gift of an interest right then to that person. So that's going to need to be reported on your tax return. So let's say that you have a $500,000 house. That's a $250,000 gift that you just made to your child. So one, it's going to take away from your lifetime gift tax exemption amount. And two, you are making that gift now and you need to remember to report it on your taxes. So that's one aspect. But now that your child is a one-half owner of the place where you go to sleep every night, that asset is also potentially liable if they were to get into, let's say, an accident and were to be sued by somebody that they had harmed. Well, one of the assets that that person is going to be able to go after include the house that you're living in that you just transferred an ownership interest in to your child. So while you had been focused on, you know, making sure that it had transferred in the future, you've exposed yourself to a real danger in the present. You know, and then one other benefit that a person misses out on is that there's no step up in the underlying basis of the real property. So if the parent were to hold it until they passed away, and then it gets transferred to their child following their death, there would be no tax due from a capital gains perspective if a sale were to occur after that individual's death. But in the case of a transfer during life, so only one half of that interest, the one half retained, by the parent is going to get that step up in basis upon that person's death when it's transferred to their child. And, you know, that can represent a real significant loss as far as taxes are concerned.
Let's talk about how to avoid this, because we talked about not only the fees, the cost, the fact that you have no control over your estate, because basically the state that you're domiciled in comes in and directs. Now, for example, in case of Prince, the state in which he's domiciled in, that state is going to determine who's the ultimate beneficiary, his sister, his five half-siblings, and a possible adult child. But how you can avoid this, and let's talk about trust, because not only do trust avoid probate, all the fees associated with it, but it gives you more control over things like probate, incapacity, and also if you have a large enough estate over, let's say, $5.5 million, possible ways to save estate taxes. Because I was reading in a state review that basically the $100 million that Prince's estate will face could have been eliminated.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the beginning of our conversation today, we identified probate as the process by which a court supervises the transfer of assets from a deceased person to other living persons or organizations. So by establishing a trust during an individual's life, you are transferring your ownership to this trust, and that trust is going to live on after you pass away. So the necessity of the court supervising that transfer of assets from you to other persons is no longer necessary, because during your life, it's as if you took those assets and put it into a basket, which we'll think of as the trust, that is going to survive you. So during your life, you're able to maintain significant, if not total, control over those assets. However, you do it in a capacity, kind of like being the president of an organization. However, in this case, you're the trustee of your trust. Now, when the president of an organization passes away, that organization doesn't seek to exist. Instead, it continues to exist, and a new president is put into that place. The same thing happens with your trust. So you as an individual established it during your life. You acted as the trustee. But at the point that you pass away, that office of the trustee is vacant, and the person who you identified during your lifetime steps into your role as trustee. So at no point was it necessary to transfer the assets from you to this next trustee or to the people who are ultimately going to receive it, because you already did that during your life. And so, you know, that's the key step that enables a person to avoid probate. So what sorts of trusts will enable a person to avoid probate in this sense? A funded trust, right? So this is really important.
The reason that we're seeing this on the news is the fact that if his assets were held in the trust, we wouldn't have known who his beneficiaries were. We would have probably not known the size of his estate. All the public information you've seen come out in the media over the last month, all of that is because of probate and not having an estate plan. Had he had a trust, we wouldn't know any of this.
Not at all. You know, the public nature of probate is one of the big reasons to avoid it. Even if you don't have the same high profile as Prince, your information regarding your estate will be made available to the public through court records if your estate ends up being subject to probate following your death. So, you know, you mentioned all these different high-profile people at the top of the show, and you know, we collectively as a society know all sorts of information about their finances, about their lives, who their heirs were, and we wouldn't be privy to much or any of that if they had a proper estate plan in place prior to death.
And so now let's go back to Prince's estate, because reading in estate review, there's a number of things that he could do. There were a variety of trusts: a foundation trust, a charitable remainder trust, a irrevocable life insurance trust, a charitable lead trust, an intentionally defective grantor trust. In other words, this $100 million, which is going to go to the government, could have been avoided. And I think, Adam, there's this misperception by a lot of people that, oh, I take ownership to a piece of property with joint tenancy, I'll always avoid probate. Or, gosh, I'm not Larry Lots of Bucks, so I don't have gazillion dollars, so I don't need an estate plan. And they don't understand the things of incapacity that we see happen oftentimes between a couple, special needs for children, and not to mention the ease of which an estate can be carried on. For example, let's take a husband and wife. A husband gets very sick, can't handle the finances. The wife has to take over. Rather than going through in a court and have the court administer something under incapacity, the wife could carry on the affairs as if nothing happened, just like, as you mentioned, in a corporation.
That's such a great point, because oftentimes we get focused on death and death only. But, you know, having older parents who are experiencing dementia, knowing people who have gone through just a terrible accident and lose the ability to continue to manage their own affairs, those are things that we also need to be thinking about, because they're real possibilities. And so by having a trust in place and some of the documents that are associated with it, you can make sure that you identify the person that you would like to handle your affairs while you're still living but unable to handle them. And you can also give certain instructions as to what you would like them to do with those assets and how it is that you'd like them to carry on your affairs. And, you know, one of the encouraging things is, I know that sounds intimidating to a lot of people to give up that sort of control, but one of the encouraging things is that by doing this, you know, this is going to go into action when you lose capacity. So when you have that car accident, but when you regain capacity to deal with your own business, you step back into that position and the person who you identified no longer has the power to do those sorts of things on your behalf. So really, it serves you to identify these people and then to also give instructions regarding how you'd like your affairs to be managed while you lack the ability to handle them yourself.
And would you say, Adam, when you're in a situation, for example, let's say a second marriage where there's children from the previous marriage, both spouses have children from a previous marriage, sizable assets, special needs for a particular child, or special bequests that, let's say, an owner would like, a favorite charity or something like that, or the estate is large enough to be subject to estate taxes, or even worse, a family-owned business that may not be liquid, why it's more important to have an estate plan, as much as it may be discomforting to talk about our own demise.
Yeah, you identified so many important points there. And so before I move on to talk about that, I kind of want to focus on the fact that you touched on things that are relevant not only to a conversation that you might have with an estate planning attorney, but, you know, these touch on all different aspects of your life. So this is something where you should be involving a financial planner if you work with one, you know, a potentially your CPA, because this touches on so many different areas of our lives. And that's why it's so important that we're proactive about this, because just like you wouldn't let the government come in and make some sort of decision regarding how to manage your business or to whom you'd like to give a charitable donation at the end of the year, neither do you necessarily want to do that at the point that you pass away. So by taking the time to establish your estate plan, you're making sure that the wishes that you were able to carry out during life are continued after your death. Because if you're not able to do that, you know, you identified a potential issue where there is a blended family. And oftentimes in blended families, as a lot of your listeners may be aware, there may be competing interests in that everybody isn't necessarily interested in making sure that the estate is, you know, divided equitably or goes to the person with special needs who might need it most. And so by stepping in and laying out exactly what you want to happen with that estate that you've worked so hard to build over the years, or that business that you put so much time into, you're making sure that it's not the person who fights the hardest, or it's not the person who is able to hire the best lawyer. Instead, you're able to identify a distribution plan or pick that person who you know needs the most support and ensure that you're able to use your assets to continue to benefit those people after you pass away.
What would you say, Adam, as we sum up here, if we have listeners that are out there, maybe it's a blended family, it's a second marriage, they have children that have special needs, or it's a family-run business that could be a sizable asset that's not liquid, or an estate large enough to be subject to estate taxes, or just things in general with health issues, what would you say to them to encourage them to find somebody that's qualified and sit down and put an estate plan in effect? Like, we started this conversation with a very, very successful entertainer and a very successful businessman. But today, his estate will go on with $100 million going to taxes that could have all been avoided. There will be various competing efforts by various heirs and siblings who will hire their own attorneys that are going to keep this estate open for years, squabbling and fighting over the assets of the estate, which will shrink the estate even further.
You know, we spend time every day working to build that business, provide for our family, you know, perpetuate these goals that we have. And it makes no sense not to recognize the fact that, you know, we're going to pass away and we are going to leave assets behind. And so it really is in everyone's best interest, including the people who are going to survive you, to make sure that you take the time to lay out that plan. Now, one of the things that I want to point out that maybe some of your listeners aren't considering is that you're going to be handing a lot of this work off to the attorney that you're meeting with. So really, it's a matter, I guess I kind of want to give them a little sneak peek into what the process is going to look like. It's really going to be a conversation in many ways. You're going to sit down with that person. You're going to let them know what you really value, what you want to happen after you pass away. And then that person is going to offer some suggestions as to ways in which you can achieve those goals after you pass away. And so, you know, just like you wouldn't necessarily sit back and just say, well, tax me on whatever came in this year, you know, you'd meet with a CPA and look at the different ways that you could achieve different types of deductions to make sure that you only paid the correct amount of tax instead of overpaying tax. In the same way, it's worth your listeners' time to take that time to meet with an attorney and have this conversation, and then know that you don't have to keep on kind of advancing the ball from that point. You're going to have somebody working with you whose job it is to take the information that you've given them and turn it into a legal document and an estate plan that's going to achieve those goals after they pass away, or in the case that they lose capacity.
Those are some very good points. And hopefully, if you're listening to this broadcast, you know, at least a couple times a year, we hear about the passing of a very famous entertainer, a successful businessman, or somebody that has notoriety. And we hear about all of this because they don't have an estate plan. So all of this information becomes public. Hopefully, by listening to this show, you listening will take some action. If you are in a situation where your estate is not well thought out or well planned, or you have a situation where you have maybe special children that have needs, you have a family-owned business, there are a number of reasons why you want to sit down and take this seriously. Adam, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow you or seek out your advice, tell them how they can do so.
The best place to do that would probably be to go through the internet, AndersonYoakum.com. That's Anderson, YOCUM.com. My contact is all there.
Well, listen, Adam, thanks as always for joining me on the program. Great advice, and hopefully we've motivated our listeners out there, if they don't have an estate plan, to take some action. All the best to you, sir, and come back and talk to us again.
I'd be happy to. Thanks, Jim.
Well, Jim, to reiterate what we've been talking about today, especially all the famous people that died either intestate or they died even with a will but didn't tie together all of the details of what they wanted done after their demise and the problems it's created for family members, not to mention legal battles, this is another indication of why everybody really needs to have a will. And simple wills, at least just a basic will, is not hard to do.
No, it's not hard to do. And if you have any of the issues we talked about, incapacity, you want to avoid probate, taxes, costly settlement, or you just want to keep your affairs private. I mean, Frank Sinatra had a will, but he didn't have the trust to keep it private. So there it was. We were reading his will on this program, and there's many other famous people I could have read as well. don't leave yourself in that kind of situation. Well, in the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Hopefully, we've motivated you to take some action. But until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.